the podcast with everything paranormal. It's the 222 Paranormal Podcast, starring your host, Jen Shortridge, and your substitute for today, Joe Shortridge.
Due to illness, I will be playing myself.
Yes.
Hello.
What up, brother?
How's it going? How did you like last week's show?
I loved it. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Which one was it?
The crying boy.
Oh, yes. I cried all the way home. Actually, I cried on the way to work today. I'm like, I can't take it anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. I want to win the lottery.
Yeah, we all do.
But that doesn't happen.
No.
Doesn't. But anyways, Joe, what's going on? What's new? What's shaking?
Nothing. Just another busy week and stuff done.
Yep.
Working in the yard, all that jazz. Same old stuff.
So exciting.
Anything paranormal happen at your house?
Yeah, I keep seeing David. I see him out of the corner of my eye, or like when I turn a corner, he's standing there and then he's gone like that. Just like I'll see him and he's gone. I'm like, dude, come talk to me. He hasn't come into my dream. He hasn't said anything. He hasn't moved anything. So I don't know.
Has it cleaned or anything?
Yeah, I should. Yeah, he promised to remodel my bathroom before he passed away. But
well, it still got done.
It still got done.
But. We're getting a lot of traction on the website and everything about your pink treadmill. Have you been on your pink treadmill?
I have not been on the treadmill. It's been like, what, 3 weeks since you put it up? It's still sitting there. I almost hung a towel on it the other day. I was like, well, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to use it as a clothing rack. Well, you know, that's how it goes. So, when you work 60 hours and 70 hours and have two businesses on the side, there's just no time for treadmilling at all.
Unless you,
or anything else,
put your computer on the treadmill and type and
need like
walk.
A little platform. Yeah. No, I can't. I'm on the computer enough. Enough. But anyways.
So we have a legend.
We have
sitting here.
A living legend to talk about.
The world famous Ricky Rocks.
Wow. Real applause.
Wow.
Welcome to the show, Ricky Rocks.
Thanks for having me out here, man. That was a nice 2-hour drive to get down here to to fabulous Toledo, Ohio.
Man. Welcome to the studio. I already told them the rules, Joe, about the studio. So
yeah.
It's all good.
Yeah.
No farting in the studio.
It's the only rule we have.
The window's open, so. Yeah.
I was telling Ricky about how I'm surprised that you don't hear the leaf blower in the background.
Don't jinx it.
Yeah.
Give it a couple minutes. Yeah. We got time.
Yeah. Right. So Ricky drives 2 hours just to be on our podcast. I'm like, that's dedication,
that
man.
Is. Well, I mean, the thing is, I mean, Joe's been asking me for like 2 years to be on this podcast. And, you know, I'm like, I got to make this happen. Once Joe gives me a day, I got to go.
Yeah. That's right. Nobody says no to Joe.
Yeah. I'll make the drive. It's cool.
Like every time I see you, every time I see you out at a show or that, I'm like, well, I'll check with Jen and I'll let you know. I'm like,
yeah. And then 6 months later, you'll ask me again.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I'll still do it.
Like, God dang it. Yes, I'll be there. Mother trucker. Driving into, getting into traffic jams. We were both in the same traffic jam.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Like I said, I almost told you guys, just pull over. I'll bring the equipment to you.
Yeah, right.
Do it in the back of the car on the side of the freeway.
Hey, why not?
Well, you know. We're mobile. We've podcasted in the car before, like in driving from Pennsylvania. We're like talking, passing the mic back.
But have you done the shoulder of a freeway yet?
No.
We should try
that.
No,
we haven't.
Yeah.
Let's do it. But, you know,
I think the banner will get blown over.
Joe, tell everybody. Yeah. Want. I mean, he should take this act on the road.
Literally on the road.
Yeah.
Or the shoulder of the road.
Shoulder, yeah.
Oh, geez. This is going a rabbit hole real quick.
Told you.
Joe, tell everybody a little bit about why Mr. Ricky Rocks is in the studio today.
I told him to come in.
Tell me why.
For the last 2 years.
Yeah. Well, he had experience that we've been wanting to talk about, and it's one of those life-changing experiences, I would imagine, that not too many people have. So what happened?
Well,
tell me everything. Let's start at when you were 5 and then tell us how.
Tell me about your
I didn't know you could do 9-hour podcasts.
Please, no.
Well, I mean, the kind of Cliff's Notes version of the beginning part was you know, I was in my mid-20s and I was, you know, just getting into hard rock and heavy metal and going to local shows and all that. And, you know, I've been playing since I was 13, but, you know, when you're kids, you're not around a lot of hardy legal substances. You know, guys might smoke a joint or something like that, but that was the extent of it, you know. And I'm getting out there and meeting all these people doing metal and hard rock, and it you know, I start seeing the harder stuff laying around. And, you know, and I'm 20 at when this happened. I was 20, just about turned 25, and or I was maybe 25, I don't know, years are weird with me. And I had kind of just stayed away from it for the most part. But at some point in my mid-20s, as a lot of 20-year-olds do, you kind of fall into a weird depression, kind of a funk thing. And that's kind of what happened. And, you know, I tried for the first time, probably, I know I was 24, I started dabbling in cocaine a little bit. And my personality type is I get very addicted to things very easily. You know, I just quit smoking a couple months ago, and that was something I had been doing since I was 17 years old, so almost 20 years.
And did you go cold turkey?
No, I do vape pens now.
Okay.
You know, and, you know, I started, you know, if somebody had some blow, you know, I'd do a little bit here, a little bit there, but then eventually just picked up more and more and more and more to the point where I was shelling out sometimes a couple hundred dollars a day. And it became less of a social thing for me, and it kind of just turned into something I just did, like at home. I could be by myself, and how some people go out and have a cigarette or something like that, I would be drinking immensely and doing a lot of drugs.
Okay.
By myself. Yeah. And, you know, eventually catches up to you. And the night this happened, I went to a friend's birthday party. I remember this very vividly, and I had done a little bit before because I had worked like 18 hours or something like that, and the day before, and I'm like, I gotta stay up, you know, and cocaine will just keep you up. I mean, you could do it forever and you'll just stay up and stay up. And I remember getting home that night, and I remember by the time the whole thing was over, I had been up for 2 days.
Okay.
Pacing around my condo. You know, I don't remember a lot of it. I remember the heart stopping and twice.
Okay.
And it's a trippy feeling when your heart stops, because when that happens, you can't move anything. You know, your arms, you can't move. Your brain's still clicking. Your brain's still going. And I remember thinking, oh, man, I did it. Yeah. This is it, you know. And
were you home alone at the time?
My wife was home. She was just my girlfriend at the time. We were living together. I don't think she knew what was going on until a lot. I haven't really talked to her about it. We just kind of shut this era of my life out. Mm-hmm. I think she probably knew what was going on, but she didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
As what to do with me. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I'm running around the house just mumbling and just like you just drank like five monsters. You're just mm-hmm. pacing around and fidgety, and you're clenching your hands and moving your fingers, and, you know, you just can't stop moving because you're afraid if you stop moving, you know, your heart's going to explode. And I remember, you know, I was at the top of my steps, and I just felt my heart just stop. Hmm. You know, it's going 500 beats a minute. Felt like it was going to pump out of my chest. And then it just, boom, done, stopped. And fell to the ground. And I remember in my head, I'm, crap, I did it this time. My mom's going to be so upset with me. And then blacked out. And then that's when I kind of saw what I know as heaven.
Okay.
And to kind of preface all this, I'm not a religious guy.
Yeah.
I never will. I'm the kind of person that I don't believe anything until I see it. Mm-hmm. You know, never went to church as a kid or anything like that. No spirituality, no religion in my life growing up. And, you know, I was going through depression at the time. So I'm like asking God, if you're up there, help me. I'm stuck here, and I pretty much have a death wish at this point. And I remember when it happened, it looked like first you go black, your eyes close, it's black, and then it kind of turned into a very dense white fog, like the foggiest day you'll ever seen.
Yeah.
And in the distance, you kind of see a silhouette, or I did, of a wall, kind of like you're going into like a big mansion, you know, where it mm-hmm. has like the big gate and a wall. Mm-hmm. And I see little figures. I can't see faces or anything like that, but just little figures. It looks like it's probably, you know, 150 yards away. That's kind of like how far it is, but you just kind of see it, and you know, it's kind of hard to explain. You know, it was just kind of like a subconscious thing that kind of entered my consciousness at the time, like, it's not your time. And then I woke up, and my heart was still beating 500 beats a minute, and then it stopped again. The whole thing happened again, and you know, eventually, you know, I saw the wall, the gate, the figures, the dense, dense, dense fog. And then after the second time, my heart had kind of slowed down a little bit, and that was pretty much that.
Yeah.
Did you have any sensation of rushing to this area, or would you like feel like, were you floating into this area, or were you just there and you saw it?
I was just there. I didn't move. I was by myself. It's not like there were a lot of people with me. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of like you're standing. I equate it to standing on a football field that's packed with fog, and you're standing in one end zone, and at the other side, there's just people walking along a wall.
Okay.
You know, that's what it was for me.
So as you know, this is happening, did you have like conscious thoughts like, okay, what is this? Or, you know, you said you had thoughts right before you blacked out. You were thinking, oh my God, my mom and this. Did those thoughts continue into after you had?
No. Everything that I was worried about here mm-hmm. Didn't even enter anything there. It was, okay, this is where I am.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't, what is this place? What's this? Who are those people? It was kind of like, wow, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, I wasn't worrying about my girlfriend, my wife, or my mom, or mm-hmm. car payments, or having to go to work. And none of that was in my head anymore. You know, it was all, this is it.
Did it almost feel like home to you? Using that terminology.
Yeah, I know people are, you know, do the heaven is the ultimate home thing. No, because it, you know, like the consciousness that came into me, you know, it wasn't like a voice talking to me. It was just kind of like the only thing that, you know, how you asked, like, were you worried about anything here or anything like that? That was the only thing in my head. It's not your time, mm-hmm. you know, but it wasn't me thinking it. You know, and thinking about it all these years later, I mean, that was 10-11 years ago. I think it was, you know, God or whatever that higher power is saying, look, you wanted your proof. Boom. There it is. Mm-hmm. There's your proof, what you need. And I'm telling you, it's not your time right now. You know, so that's kind of how it felt.
Yeah. I was going to ask, but you kind of mentioned it already, if you felt like you died. Like, when you went over there, did you say, I'm dead? You know, but you kind of already answer. But
yeah, it didn't. It was just, you know, the initial blacking out and heart stopping, that was the worst part of it. You know, because at that point, I was very scared.
Yeah.
You know, and then when it got to the, you know, the dense fog, I wasn't scared of anything anymore. Yeah. It was just like, I'm here,
uh-huh.
you know, and that was it. I didn't feel anything like any pain or anything like that. And, you know, it was just kind of like, you know, outside your body kind of thing. Yeah. It's like, mm-hmm. you don't feel anything anymore. You don't feel your heart pounding out of your chest. You don't feel the headache you had for being up for 2 days. You know, I'm here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when this initially happened, and your heart stopped, and then you woke back up, mm-hmm. and then your heart stopped again. What was your girlfriend doing at the time? Like, was she like?
I think she was just sitting on the couch in the living room, kind of just wondering what was going on.
So where were you at the time?
I was upstairs.
You were upstairs. Yeah, okay.
She was downstairs in the living room.
Okay. And she didn't hear you, or did you fall over? Did you physically fall or anything?
I blacked out before I hit the ground. You know, I kind of just remember falling. I don't remember actually hitting. So I think by time I had hit the ground, I don't know if I...
Did she hear you like slump over or anything?
Not that she's told me.
Okay.
You know, it...
Does she not want to talk about it?
No, she doesn't.
Okay.
She was kind of questioning why I'd want to talk about it, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm like, that's time.
Yeah. When you were... over there, we'll just say over there.
Sure.
How long do you feel that you were there? And then in real life, how long was the actual event?
Well, it felt when I was there over there,
yeah.
you know, it felt like, you know, like you're the amount of time you'd be stopped at a red light or something okay. like that, you know, a couple minutes. That's what mm-hmm. it felt like. But I remember when I came back, I'd make it a point to look at the clock a lot.
Okay.
And I was probably on the ground for probably about 5 minutes.
Okay.
You know, I remember looking at the clock and it's like 4:30 or something like that. And then by the time I swung around to the clock again, it was like 4:45. And I'm like, I don't remember the last 15 minutes. So I'm assuming that's kind of mm-hmm. that time space right there, you know, and I remember just prior, you know, this is kind of where it kind of falls into the weird rabbit hole that I was telling you how it's not really a linear story.
Yeah.
You know, as I'm walking around the house, I remember I called my dad and I was like, I don't know what to do. This is what's going on. This is what I did. And my dad used to live in Kentucky, so very far away. So he couldn't get up here. So he's talking to me. He's like, okay, well, you're probably overdosing right now. And so he's trying to talk me through it. I'm like, you know, I couldn't talk. I was just talking super fast. And my wife was saying I was making no sense. You know, I was just gibbering and jabbering super fast. And, you know, fast forward a month later, because me and my dad weren't super close, my dad dies. So that's my last conversation I ever had with him.
Oh, wow.
Was that. And so how this kind of weirdly all ties in together is, you know, after after this whole episode was over, I went to the doctor and my heart was a mess. I have, what do they call it? Arterial fibrillation or whatever.
Yeah.
And my heart doesn't beat right
yeah.
anymore. And I started suffering from debilitating panic attacks and I fell into a huge depression. They pretty much had me on horse tranquilizers because I couldn't sleep. And, you know, when my dad died, I remember he kind of came into my head, you know, one mm-hmm. night. He's like, you got to sort your stuff out.
Yeah.
You know, and you have your girlfriend here and she wants to take care of you. You need to take care of yourself. And the weird thing was she had a dream, you know, a week prior with my dad saying, take care of him.
Oh.
Because if he's left by himself, he's going to probably kill himself.
Yeah.
So, and I didn't know about her dream with that until a year or so later, you know, because she didn't know how to make any sense of it, you know. So that's how this all kind of ties together. Because, you know, after that episode, I hadn't talked to my dad. You know, I just got a phone call. Your dad died in a car accident.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I come down to Kentucky and identify the body. So, you know, the last conversation I had with him was, Dad, help.
You know? And I would imagine, I mean, I doubt if it did, but I would imagine that could put you right back in the same situation you were in before.
Yeah, and it threw me into a horrible depression. But if the... I don't like calling it overdose because that's a very, very harsh word, and I hate using that word. But if I wouldn't have had that, I probably would have offed myself, you know, because that's how much of a depression I was in after my dad died. And, you know, if that didn't happen in my head, you know, I saw the proof that there is a heaven there and it's not my time and there's stuff I need to do and I have more of a life to live. If I hadn't gone through that, I probably would have died in 2009.
Yeah.
You know,
so what did you, I'm not get personal, but like, how did you get yourself off of that, out of that depression?
It was, I'm not going to lie.
Talking in general terms. Like, I'm not saying, okay, did you run 16 miles a day?
No, I mean, it was a lot of medication and a lot of therapy and a lot, years of therapy. Mm-hmm. I still go to therapy whenever I kind of feel myself falling back into that. I still battle with it. Mm-hmm. You know, 10 some odd years later, I still battle with all that. It's a lot of, you know, at the time, I was very selfish, you know, as a lot of 20-some-odd-year-old kids are. Yeah. And now that I've kind of gotten older, I have a daughter now, and I'm married. I have a family. And so I have all this good stuff. So I don't dwell on bad things anymore. I kind of just either get myself out of that situation that's negative, and I feel myself falling into that, and kind of just focus more on the awesome life that I do have now. Yeah. And that, you know, usually can pull me out of it. I still have panic attacks, and my wife's gotten really good. I've been with my wife now for 17 years. And so she's kind of gotten good at being able to talk me out and talk me down and calm me down, you know, when I wake up in the middle of the night freaking out, you know. So it's a lot of things, you know.
You had mentioned that you were raised without any, like, formal religion. Right. Or did you have any belief in the afterlife or the paranormal at that, you know, growing up, or were you interested in that?
It was, you know, it was, I was never into ghosts or religion or reading the Bible. I still haven't read it, you know.
I haven't either.
You know, I'm still to this point, I don't go to church or anything like that, you know, because my personal thing is all you need is faith. You know, that there is something there. You know, the Bible stories, you know, at the end of the day, it's stories. And you just have to have faith that there is something there. And, you know, I think it says in the Bible, if you have faith, there is a home for you in heaven, you know. So I have that faith. I was shown it. You know, I don't know how much more proof I'd need.
Exactly.
Rather than walk through and meet him myself, you know, in my head, I've seen it, you know.
Was it a peaceful feeling there? Was it like I can, you know, I'm not afraid to go back feeling?
It was, you know, when I was in that spot, you know, it was the most calm that I had felt ever.
Okay.
You know, there's zero worry. Yeah. You know, there's, you don't have to look after anybody. You know, you're in the most positive place that I can't imagine any more positive, worry-free, warm feeling than that.
Was there any music? Did you hear anything?
No, it was kind of it was kind of weird, like,
no,
that
angels singing.
There were no harps or angels.
Mariah Carey wasn't singing the high note.
Oh, if Mariah Carey was there, I'd be like, send me back. Yeah, no, it was very quiet. It was very just chill.
Yeah. And you said it was all white?
It was like a fog.
Okay.
You go out in the morning and you just see, you know, the sun's coming up and you just see a very, very, very the densest fog you've ever seen.
Since this, have you noticed things? I know this is kind of a general question, but notice things more in the world, such as colors and sounds and stuff, or just pretty much the same?
I've grown to appreciate smaller things more.
Yeah.
Like I was telling you guys before we started, I moved out to pretty much the woods, you know, out of the city. And before, I was just go, 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 rock and roll, party, party, party. And now I'm a lot more mellow, and I'm a lot more, I hear different, you know, I hear more, you know, I can sit outside and I can hear more things. You know, you're just kind of more in, I'm a little bit more in touch with what's going on around me now, rather than being so, like, laser focused on debauchery.
Yeah. And the rock and roll life.
Yeah.
I mean, you still live the rock and roll life.
Not nearly as much as I did then. Yeah.
Definitely has having a child changed your perspective on life in general, or
oh yeah, I think
like life and death and near death experiences.
Having the kid makes me want to kind of take better care of myself.
Yeah,
you know, because you know, like I said, it'd be easy for me to fall back into that lifestyle, but now I have a 5-year-old that I want to see grow up, you know, so I gotta make sure I last 20 or 30 more years. I'm sure with everything that I've done, I've probably knocked 20 years off the end of my life, but so I gotta, you know, and by no means am I a health freak or anything like that.
Yeah.
I, you know, I'll still plow down a pizza and all this, and I still go out and drink, and it just kind of like having my daughter, Olivia, she just kind of makes me, it's, if I'm ever down, I can pretty much just look at her and right. It'll kind of pull me back out a little bit. And she has the weird gene where she's very empathetic and she can tell when I'm having a rough time and she's like her mother. She knows how to comfort me and kind of like calm me down. And so yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Have you had any dreams since that experience of that place? I lose my voice.
You know, I think about it a lot. It's not like a dream.
Okay.
The only thing kind of close to a dream that I have that kind of revolves around this is it was a weird thing. And you know how I mentioned I had my dad in dreams. After I'd kind of worked my way through that era of my life, you know, he was always a constant in dreams. You know, he'd always kind of guide me a little bit, not like do this, do that, but kind of like, okay, you're doing good, you're doing fine, kind of like a coach.
Yeah.
And it got to a point where I was dreaming about him every night. There'd be some facet that he'd work himself in. And then one night he's like, all right, man, you got this, you're good. And that was probably a year or so, year and a half or so after that. And ever since then, I have not had one dream with him in it, you know, and talking to my wife about it, she's like, well, maybe your dad was just kind of sticking around here to kind of, since he never really got the closure with him while he was alive, maybe he just was just kind of sticking around, you know, kind of coaching you until you got your
feet on the ground,
yeah. Got your life straight. And then once, you know, maybe once he was confident that you were good, he was like, all right, my job here is done. And he might have
You know, with our work in the paranormal, we've talked to many, many different people who say, you know, your loved ones pass and they're here to guide you and then you can call upon them. You know, we've heard from different people that say that, you know, if you call your spirits or your parents or your loved ones, they can come and go.
Sure.
So, you know, I wouldn't think that he's gone.
You know, it's not like he's a constant thing anymore.
Yeah,
you know, if I have a question as to whether I'm, you know, I just had this conversation with my daughter, like literally last night.
Okay.
About, because she was talking about her like great grandma who passed. And, you know, I'm like, well, my daddy passed. And if I ever have a question, you know, I can still talk to him and he might not talk back, but he'll put a bug in your head. He'll put a bug in your head and kind of guide you a little bit. You know, I still do it to this day. You know, I'll be at home alone and I'll just talk.
Yeah.
On a personal note, when you were talking about how your dad came to you in your dreams, my best friend passed away and I dream about her. But the weird thing is I never see her talking, but yet I hear her talking. Have you ever... I mean, have you dug that deep into it where you noticed something like
that? It was kind of like that. It was kind of like that very early on, the dreams I had with my dad. You know, I'd see him sitting there and I'd hear his voice, but I wouldn't really focus on the face. The face wasn't talking to me. It was just kind of him and the voice. And then eventually it just kind of became like he's standing behind me talking to me. And then he's like, you got it. You're good. I don't have to bother you every night anymore.
Because when you were mentioning that, it kind of popped in my mind about the dreams I have with Jackie is the same way. Because she was deaf.
Yeah.
And without her cochlear implants in, you couldn't really talk to her.
Uh-huh.
But in the dreams, I never really see her like talking, like lips moving and all that.
Right.
And sometimes, like you said, she's not even there, but yet we're talking to each other.
Yeah. It's yeah. Just, yeah.
That just popped in my head. A little yeah. rabbit hole.
Yeah. Kind of, you know, I can see that. It's kind of like how it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you had any personal paranormal experiences throughout your life before or after this that you can think of? Have you ever seen anything you couldn't explain? We're just getting in the weird stuff now.
Well, the NDE the is kind stuff. Of weird. But
well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the premise of the show. But, you know, like, you've been around many people. You know, when you run in the rock and roll crowd, you meet a ton of people. You're at shows and events and... You know, you get to go in places that, you know, maybe other people don't go, but we always run into weird stuff. Like, we've had stuff happen here, you know, yeah. Like,
you know, I'll go somewhere and I'll swear I heard a voice or something like that, or somebody yelling somewhere, or somebody in the music thing throwing up somewhere. And, you know,
no.
The big thing is, you know, a lot of times this has happened at like Harpo's in Detroit because they have like a catacomb labyrinth underneath there in the basement and all that. And back in the day, you used to be able to just go down there and walk around. And so I'd go adventure and, you know, I'd hear something and, mm-hmm. you know, but nothing like seeing a colonial soldier walking right. around or anything like that. But I tend to think I'm not that, maybe that sensitive mm-hmm. to things like that.
I just always wonder, like, if, you know, if you have crossed over and seen the other side, if it opens up your subconscious yeah. or your, some people that's happened and yeah. they, now all of a sudden they have all these psychic abilities, you know, that's they're what, like, they can read people.
One of the questions I was going to ask is.
You're stealing all Joe's questions.
Yeah.
Sorry, Joe. Go
that's
ahead.
Okay. No, that's
just read your, just read your question.
Have you had any psychic abilities come to you after the event? Boy, that's a boring question.
You know, I don't think so. You know, I think that whole experience was simply meant to show me that there was something after. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think it was something meant to enhance any abilities of here. Mm-hmm. You know, I think once he showed me that there was something there, he's like, all right, now you're going to go back and I'm going to put you through hell.
Yeah.
You know, with my dad dying and debilitating panic attacks and heart problems and that whole bit, just know that you got to work your way through all this trouble because there's something for you on the other side of it, and you know there's a heaven. Do good, work your way through your issues and be a good person and get off that path you were on, and this is where you'll end up.
Now you got a wife and a daughter.
Yeah.
More reasons to.
Oh, yeah. To
not go back.
Yeah. If I went down that path, if I didn't kill myself, my wife would.
Mm-hmm. Happy wife, happy life.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? Has it changed, you know, your, you know, I know you play music. You play bass, right?
Yeah.
So has had that experience, like, change the way you play? Have you had any like inspiration for new music?
Well, what it showed me,
do you write at all?
Yeah.
Okay.
What it showed me was, in regards to music and that whole realm, that's not as important as I made it out to be when I was younger. That's not my life. My life doesn't revolve around rock and roll and music. And this was a problem, you know, once I adopted the Ricky Rocks thing that my wife brought to my attention, was I didn't know where to draw a line between my life at home mm-hmm. and Ricky.
Presence,
you know, she's like, I don't love Ricky Rocks. He's cocky. He's mean. And so that this whole experience has kind of shown me, like, that's what you enjoy doing, but it's not your life. Mm-hmm. There's more to life than going on stage and playing in front of five people. You know, there's a lot more. And now playing music is a very small part of my life. And I think it's better that way. My life seems a lot more full now mm-hmm. that I've kind of diminished that part of my life and kind of just put it on the side. You know, mm-hmm. it's like a dinner. Music used to be my steak and eggs and the whole thing. Now it's just the salt.
Okay. That's cool. That's together. Other weird shit. Is that bad word? I'm not supposed to say bad words.
Wow, I thought I was going to be the first one to crack.
Don't tell my mom.
Yeah.
Joe will put a bleep on it.
Now he has to go back and edit this thing.
God
and
bless America. What else is going on? Tell us the story. What else?
A story about what? I got plenty of stories.
Yeah, we love stories, man. Rock and roll debauchery. Tell us a rock and roll debauchery story.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. Tell us a good one. Okay, I'll ask you a question.
Okay.
Oh, here we go.
That's probably better.
Who's the most famous person you ever met?
The most famous person.
Besides me.
Dana Forrester.
I love her.
And James Trunco.
I love him.
No, I've met, you know, Seven Dust. Mm-hmm. Met those guys. Who else? Like
who's your musical idol?
Billy?
Nikki Six would probably be mine. Okay. From Motley Crue. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you see the movie The Dirt?
I did.
Was it good? Did you like it?
That the first 5 minutes of that movie is kind of the equivalent of my mid-20s.
Yeah.
Okay.
Minus the good-looking girls. It was a lot of...
Except his wife.
Well, she was never part of that thing. She kind of stayed on the periphery of all that. You know, instead of the hot girls, it was a lot of, you know...
Detroit hoes.
You were talking about that nudist biker colony, kind of like that kind of crowd.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was... Yeah.
And he kind of went down the same path.
Yeah. Yeah, all of my heroes kind of went down that path, you know, because my heroes musically are from that era of, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and I kind of tried to model my life after that, and it consumed me, you know. So, but instead of playing in front of 40,000 people, I was playing in front of 4 people.
Yeah.
Thank you. Good night.
Yeah. Table 5, your pizza's ready. Yeah. I've done that a couple times.
Please buy a t-shirt so I have gas money to get home.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've been there. Been there, done that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for as small as the local music scene is, there's a lot of backstage stuff that does happen, and it still happens to this day. I just opt to take myself away from it.
Yeah,
I don't go into a lot of backstages anymore. I kind of just stay.
Is that because the temptation is there?
Yeah,
like the debauchery, as you say.
Yeah, the temptation's still there, and I still have that, you know, I'll find myself sometimes being like, man, it was nice when I was dabbling in it, you know. That's where the kind of addiction kind of kicks in, and then I'm just like, okay, I gotta go back to what I learned, just take myself out of that situation. And playing in a band, there's a lot of it.
Yeah.
It's not way out front to where people that aren't musicians will just see it. You're not going to see piles of cocaine on tables out there. You know, it's very hidden. But once you're in that musician crowd, you see it a lot more.
Mm.
You know, it's still there, and it's taken a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of my friends are starting to die off now, and you know, so it's a very, very, very slippery slope.
Mm-hmm.
Very slippery slope.
Have you ever caught yourself telling somebody to either stop or that because of what you saw?
No. Okay. That's not my my place.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like telling people what they should and shouldn't do.
Yeah.
You know, because people told me what to do and
you didn't listen.
I didn't listen and I just got upset at them, and I'm like, well, I'm going to do more now because you told me not to. You know, kind of one of those things. And you know, my thing is people can make their own decisions. I'm not their father.
Yeah.
You know, these are grown-ups. You know, if that's the road somebody wants to go down, it's not my place to tell them no.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, if you could go back and tell your 20-year-old self something, what would you tell yourself? What advice would you give yourself, your young self?
It would be don't make so much out of what you wish your life would be, was going to be, you know, because in my head I was going to be a rock star. I was going to be Nikki Six. Mm-hmm. And for a while there, I was the party Detroit guy. People would come see me play, not because of the music, but because of what's Ricky going to do? Is he going to chuck his bass out into the crowd again? Is he going to throw up on the side of the and it's like, I would tell my 20-year-old, my early 20s self, there's a lot more life than this. This is the salt of your dinner. You know, yeah, it can make your life taste a little bit better, but it's not steak and potatoes of it.
Yeah. And that's good advice for, you know, anybody who's listening who, you know, life is short, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, well, it, yeah. but you can make it long, right?
Longer. Yeah.
You can make it longer.
One of the things about that though, is if you did go back and tell your 20 something self to do that, you wouldn't have been through these experiences and your life could have been completely different.
Exactly. You know, there's a part of me, like I said, you know, don't make so much out of it. But at the same point, I am very grateful that, that it happened. It did give me a new perspective on life. And if I wouldn't have had that, I probably wouldn't be here right now, you know, in lovely Toledo, Ohio, talking to you fine people.
Yay!
Now, after this happened, did you go to the hospital or anything, or...
I had been to the hospital. My wife would have to give me the numbers. She'd take me to the hospital a lot, and I try to hide it from her what was going on. And I'm like, I'm having a panic attack. I need to go to the hospital. And she'd kind of roll her eyes and be like, okay. And then when the doctor would come with all my tests, I'd tell my wife to leave, you know, because I didn't want her to know. But it probably a dozen times.
Okay.
How soon after that happened did you tell her what really happened? Or was she aware that you had?
We've never had that conversation.
Really?
No. It was kind of just some. I think she knows, but as grateful as I am that it happened, it's very embarrassing.
Who hasn't done something embarrassing in their life?
Yeah,
right?
You know? It's like I kind of assume she knows, and. Does she need to know? I mean, she knows about the heaven thing. Mm-hmm. She knows about the dad dreams.
Yeah.
But I don't think she knows really how bad it was and how prevalent it was in my life. I mean, and this whole episode, you know, this whole era of my life was only like 7 or 8 months.
Okay.
You know, so it had gone from a little here and there to full-blown hundreds of dollars a day addiction in the course of less than a year.
Wow.
You know, it had escalated very fast and very expensive.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, oh man, sounds like my bingo addiction.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, your bingo addiction won't cause you to OD. Well, it might.
Well, yeah. And I get beat up by a 95-year-old lady with her walker.
That would be an awesome debaucherous story.
Yeah.
I've seen it. I've seen fights at bingo hall between two old ladies.
See, that's worth the price of admission alone.
I know. It's good people watching, man. You get a whole new perspective on life if you're you know, is that what it's going to come to? I got to beat somebody with my walker?
Well, if they're 95 years old, let them go.
I was like, yeah, you go, girl.
They've done their time. Let them.
You whack your bingo dabber at somebody.
Yeah.
But no, you know, it's just life is interesting, right? There's never a dull moment. We've all done things embarrassed. We shouldn't be embarrassed because that's life, man.
Yeah.
That's part of life. That's your emotions. You're going to have moments of sadness, happiness, joy, embarrassment,
you know, and
anger.
I think that's part of the reason why I'm doing this. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been doing, you know, broadcasting radio for 8 years, and I've never told this story to anybody on a big level. You know, I've kind of told friends bits and pieces here and there, but never, you know, this whole thing. And, you know, like I think I told you off air when we started or whatever, my wife was like, why are you doing this? Because there's a lot of people that I know that are in this same hole.
Yeah.
And
there's hope, and right?
There is light at the end of the tunnel. You know, it might be a very long, it might be a very long tunnel, and that you can't see that light yet, but you just got to have faith that it's there. And that's kind of what this whole thing taught me. I can go through a huge depression. I can go through the worst time of my life. I could lose my job. I can lose all this, but you just keep working toward it with the faith that there is a light down there, and you can only go so far down before eventually you have to come back up.
And you received a special gift by seeing that.
Yeah, I did. And I'm very grateful for it. And it's changed my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, after it happened, I know there was some time before you had your daughter and everything. But did you want to go back? Did you want to one day just say, you know what? I'm going back today.
What, to heaven?
Yeah. Because the reason why I say it is I know you went into bad depression and that.
Yeah.
I mean, was there times where you wanted to end it just so you could go back?
Yeah, it came into my head.
Yeah.
You know, when I was having, you know, the heart problems got really bad for a while. And while I was on all this medication trying to even it out, in my head, I'm like, I could do it one more time and that might be the death knell. And that might, that would do it,
mm-hmm.
you know, just fall back into it one more time and I can go back. But, you know, in my head, you know, the way I kind of was told about the proverbial heaven and hell.
Yeah.
You kill yourself. Mm-hmm. You're not going to heaven.
And that's why I asked that question. I was kind of leading you on to that to see what your ideas of that was.
Yeah. And you know, that was kind of how I was told that there was, you know, the good place and the bad place. If you off yourself or do something to harm yourself, you haven't led a good, positive life.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what eventually got me to not fall back into that, because I saw how great that was. And just being there that short time and feeling it for that short time, knowing that one day, hopefully years and years and years and years down the line, that will be my eternity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, I can't quantify how awesome that feels.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. and that kind of, you know, you see a little smile perk up here.
Yeah.
You know, that makes me happy knowing that there's that waiting for me when that time does come. And hopefully at that point I've, you know, led a good positive life and have helped others and made a positive impact.
Mm-hmm. When you're saying that, even before that, the proverbial, the first time it happened, you saw the gate.
Yeah.
The second time it happened, you saw the gate.
Yeah.
The third time it happens, you're going to walk through.
Yeah.
You know, that's
the plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the plan.
Strut. Oh, yeah. Skip.
Yeah.
Skipping on in.
Eyeliner and scarves and the whole bit. I'm going to be waltzing through that gate, you know, and that's the big thing that keeps me kind of trying to lead a halfway decent life. You know what I'm saying?
After you had that experience, did you have any kind of like thirst for knowledge to learn more about near-death experiences, or were you just like, this is my personal experience, I don't want to know anything else?
Yeah, no. I mean, like I said, I'm not religious, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that whole thing was just some entity's way of saying, look, it's not knowing John 3:15 word
right,
for
yeah.
word. Mm-hmm, it's yeah. not about, you know, and then the thing with my dad, okay, that kind of showed me that there is something after, mm-hmm. you know, it might not be just going right up to the pearly gates. It might be hanging around, a spirit hanging around talking to you in this earthly realm, or however you want to say it, you know. So do I research it? Do I look for it? No. Okay. Do I think it's there? Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Have you ever had a psychic reading or a medium and talk to a medium or anything?
Oh, my wife wants me to. She wants me to go to a medium. I
do you have any interest in doing that? We know a couple, but
I'd be kind of afraid.
Yeah.
You know, that's, yeah. you know, as much as
it's
I've gone through,
it
seems very, it's yeah. very real and it's yeah. very yeah. present in
front
of you.
Do you think that would
you.
Be too invasive? Like, don't get in my thoughts or my head or.
It's.
Or you just don't have any interest.
I just much rather have all that be internal to me mm-hmm. rather than having somebody else
yeah.
know anything about my family.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I keep my family very private.
Yeah.
You know, you guys are, you've seen my Facebook. I don't have a lot of family pictures or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I keep my family private.
Yeah.
You know, that's just for me.
Yeah. yeah. And that there's nothing wrong with that. Really.
No.
Like in this age and day of social media,
right.
everybody knowing everybody about that.
Right.
So just come on our podcast and tell us your whole life story.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ricky. Oh, but no, you know, we really appreciate the fact that, you know, you're opening up and sharing your story with us, and you know,
yeah, it's
we don't take that lightly.
You know, it's a story. You know, you hear it from big rock stars, mm-hmm. you know, who have the world on their tray and all that, but you don't really hear it a lot from somebody who, you know, most of the people I know are musicians and are kind of on the same path as me, and when they kind of get in their head, this isn't work. This rock star thing is not working out for me. There's really no point in me being here anymore. It's not all. You got to have something outside of music and being a rock, quote unquote, rock star. You know, you need to find that ground, that base,
your purpose.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, even if you're a big rock star, it's not going to last forever. Mm-hmm. You know, eventually you're going to have to stop and you're going to have that home base to kind of just have and make your life worth living.
We don't know that. We just podcast, work,
drive.
Oh, I conference. I know. I've done the podcast thing. It's a thankless job.
I don't know. I think Joe and I have, we've been doing it 3 years now.
Yeah.
3 years. This will be the 152nd episode
of
the show. So, you know, it's been daunting. There's been times like Joe and I are like, what the heck is our topic going to be this week? We have no idea.
Pull it out of a hat.
And we pull it out and it all fits together. But, you know, I'm like, it's a lot of work. It's a commitment. Big time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but it does have its rewards. We met great people like yourself. New friends. We met lots of friends through it. And
well, I think maybe the difference is your podcast is good. Mine was just horrible.
Thanks.
Mine was
put that in the reel, Joe.
Yeah.
Somebody called it good.
Just
besides
a bunch of dudes
mom.
Drinking beer. And that's all mine was. Yeah.
So how's your show going now?
Yeah.
Let's talk about your show.
What's good?
Well, I doubt your listeners know anything about me, but in the Metro Detroit area, I've done internet broadcasting for almost a decade now and took a little bit of a break. I've been on like 3 different networks in Metro Detroit, got fired from them all. And, you know, it was December or January, I decided, you know, I'm good at what I do, you know, and for some reason people like listening to my voice and I'm like, all right, I'm just going to do this by myself. I'm going to do like you guys do. I'm not going to work with other people. So I, you know, have people bickering at me. I'm just going to do it by myself, do it in my basement, have a buddy over, talk, have a couple beers, listen to music and, try to get all that out to the world. And we've been doing it now. I mean, we've only done 14 episodes, 14 weeks.
Okay.
So it's relatively new, but it's growing very, very nicely and very organically and getting listeners from New York, California, bands from everywhere sending me stuff. You know, we just played a couple bands from Italy, and we have one from Spain that we're playing this weekend.
Oh, nice.
You know, so it's stuff like that. It's cool. You know, I like sitting in my house and listening to something that probably nobody around here has heard before, and you know that's what gets me going.
Yeah,
you know, I enjoy it, and it's cool.
All right,
Joe. What else? What else?
What else? What else can we pick at his brain?
Oh, rocks100.com, ROXX number 100.com.
How did they get a hold of you?
You can listen to independent music 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. My live show, the Ricky Rock Show, is every Sunday from 8 to 10 p.m.
Very cool.
Awesome. Well, thanks for stopping in. It's a blast.
Thank you for having me.
You know, after 6 years of asking.
Yeah. You were asking me to be on your podcast before you even had a podcast.
Yeah.
Way to go, Joe. But no, yeah, we really, really appreciate you coming in. And hopefully, you know, your story is going to be an inspiration to somebody else who's maybe out there listening and definitely.
And hopefully your listeners enjoyed it, those who don't have weird substance abuse problems or anything like that. Hopefully somebody got a kick out of it.
You know, it's...
Or found it, you know, enlightening or whatever.
It's a rare thing to run into somebody who's had a near-death experience. You know,
right.
There have been people, but it's... In our realm, in our circle, very rarely
right.
do we mm-hmm. get the chance to talk to somebody who's physically, or you know, not physically, but... has had that
right.
experience. So we appreciate you bringing your story to the table.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And thanks for not farting this studio.
Came close.
But you're always welcome back. And Joe will still stalk you to be on his podcast.
Yeah.
Just for round two, right?
So anyways, thanks for stopping in. And let's leave everyone with a little bit of you.
This and James is Trunco.
Mound Road Engine.
Listen to that
the
bass.
The evil one.
It's all about
with
bass.
Ricky Rocks
yeah.
on bass.
Thanks, brother.